Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on November 20th, 2015, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Okay, I just want to say something right off the bat. I've seen this film many times. I've read the book, like I say, every couple of years. Get really choked up watching this movie, because the thing that I find amazing about this film is, to me, not just because of my background, but this is a very moving film to me, and it's a completely unsentimental film, and it's extremely rare when that happens in especially in American movies, when something is that emotionally wrought without being sentimental at all. So just an observation, Leonard. But I just want to start off by just asking you, what was your inspiration for writing this book? I mean, what really was it that made this your book? I mean, this is really your contribution to American letters in a very profound way, I think.
Well, I'd like to pass it off as pure fiction, but a lot of my own experience went into this. I did have some amateur fights in Stockton. Didn't do any better than Ernie Munger. His first fight, got the nose broken just like he did. And I'd actually sparred with a main eventer who'd been on a two-year drunk, and we sparred in the YMCA. Things happened to me that just struck me as made to order for stories, you know? I sparred with a guy. It was the first time he worked out in 2 years of boozing, and I did better than he did. So I'd seen him fight, you know. He's a good main eventer before he turned into an alcoholic, and he told me to go to the gym. And I'd been working at a gas station in Skid Row in Stockton, and one day a trainer drove in to get some gas, and he had boxing gloves and head guards and everything in the car, and so I got to talking to him about boxing, and he invited me to come to the gym someday. I'd already been working out for several years in the garage, punching the bag. My father had been a very good amateur fighter for quite a few years. Fought for the Olympic Club in San Francisco. You knew about that. Yep. And it was sort of in my mind that I might as well go to the gym someday and really see if I could become a fighter. And it all fit together anyway. I went down and, actually Ernie did better than I did, I think. And the guy who was a little like Tully actually made a comeback, too. And he fought a guy from Mexico City and won the fight. I didn't know anything about his personal life, so I made up the girlfriend and their conversations and all that. I think most novelists must take some real life, some autobiography, and then embroider a lot on that. It's, for me, it was like a starting point for my imagination anyway.
And my dad, like I said, was a boxing writer. And, you know, he hated boxing movies because they were so fake, you know. And I was just curious if you had an opinion about that, like the way boxing stories are written in literature, with the rare exception, like something like W.C. Hinds' The Professional or something a book like that. Boxing is usually done very theatrically, both in literature and in cinema. And I think the thing that's so amazing about Fat City is how it just throws all that out the window. In many ways, if you read the book, and I'm going to give a pitch here, because even though you've seen the movie, if you have not read the book, you haven't really had the true experience of Fat City, because it is an extraordinarily well-written novel that is really, really profound. And you should read the book as well. But the fact that you were subverting so many tropes and cliches about boxing stories, was that a very conscious thing on your part?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I don't know if I ever saw a boxing movie that I really liked. You know, there'd be parts of it that I would like. But they all were so false and so melodramatic. I consciously set out to write an anti-melodrama, and like I didn't need to make Lucero, the Mexican fighter, injured, but that was all part of well, the anti-melodrama, that was all part of taking away Tully's achievement. He wins a fight, but he's fighting an injured guy. Didn't know it. I didn't want anything to turn out well, I guess.
But given that, I have to say that in a boxing scene in a movie. And this is something that I really give John Huston, and I haven't read your screenplay for this movie, so I don't know if this is you or John Huston, but the sense of compassion that you have for those two fighters, that it really doesn't actually matter who's the winner and who's the loser. When they actually embrace at the end of that scene, every time I watch the movie, that actually brings tears to my eyes, because, you know, you and I, we've been around fighters, and we, you know, we know what these guys endure and that they take to do this for so little gain, except when it's in the movies, or except if it's Floyd Mayweather or something. You know, it is for the $100 in some tank town, you know. And I just, I do want to ask you to that point. Can you speak a little bit about adapting your novel for the screen, which is a rare thing for a novelist to be able to do that? And there are significant differences between the two, especially in the third act and as you bring things to a conclusion. So I'm just, what can you share with us about the process of actually doing the adaptation?
I think that if I had any other director than Huston, it would have turned out very differently, and I would have been fired, and it would be an unrecognizable picture now. This producer, Ray Stark, had an assistant who read the book and convinced Stark to buy the book, and they didn't have a director yet, and Stark hired me to do a script, and so I wrote it as closely as I could to the novel, and this is the way Hollywood guys think. I turned it in, and the producer says, okay, thanks, now we'll hire another writer to rewrite it. And I don't think he had ever read it. Even when the movie was finished, I never felt from my talks with Stark that he actually had read the book or my script. Well, anyway, he hired Huston. He had another director in mind who actually, I had story conferences with this guy, and he would be saying things like, we don't have a fixed fight, and it was almost like that. Where are the mobsters? And and that was pretty scary. But then he had quibbles with the producer Stark over money. He wanted more money. So
Leonard, I'm afraid you're going to have to tell us who this is.
So he left anyway, and so Houston was second choice. And Houston had amateur fights. He had boxed, and he knew the reality of boxing, and he went along with my story. He wasn't saying, where are the gangsters? And he stuck very closely to the novel. The ending is somewhat different, but it was because both Stark and Houston kept saying they wanted the two main characters together at the end. And at first I said, I don't know what they would do, you know. Their story arcs are sort of concluded. And then I was by myself one evening, and I thought, if their stories are over and they really have nothing to say, I'll put them together to have a cup of coffee and talk, and they won't be able to say anything.
Yeah, well. But I'm going to back up, because I am going to hold you to this. Who was the original director? I want to, you can share this.
Mark Rydell.
Mark Rydell. Okay.
But he was never hired.
Okay. But I was curious about that. Who was the original guy going to be? You know, okay. All right. Not a bad director, but we'll go with John Huston on this one, I think. And very interesting, because you probably wouldn't know this, but there are so many actual, authentic Northern California boxing people in this movie that gives it this incredible veracity. Did you have any hand in that, or how was the whole casting thing done?
I'm proud of this contribution. I used to work out in Newman's Gym in San Francisco, and the Mexican fighter, Sixto Rodriguez, worked out there. He was a light heavyweight contender, and I suggested him when they needed a guy of that weight. And just such a wonderful face. And
this is Arcadio Lucero.
I thought he was a very moving actor. And every time I see it, I love that scene, which was like pure Houston, where the lights are going out. And I mean, most fighters would have a manager and maybe a trainer traveling with them, that, as you know, not all do, and especially if you're coming from a long way off, like Mexico City, a guy will very often be sent up there all on his own. And I often think Billy Tully was the loneliest man in the world, really. But Lucero is pretty damn lonely, too.
Well, and that's part of the genius of this whole thing, is, you know, how Tully goes on and on, you know, with Ruben about, you let me down because you didn't go with me to my fight in Panama. And then you see that he has this bond with Lucero, because Lucero arrives alone on the bus to fight Tully, and these guys are alone. And even tonight, watching this movie again, you know, I had a real emotional reaction at the start of that fight scene, which is really one of the great fight scenes ever, for just how real it is when Stacy Keach fights Sixto Rodriguez. When how many movies have you seen? How many boxing movies have you seen where the fighter looked at the audience to see the person that he's fighting for? And there's nobody there for Billy Tully. You know, he is totally alone at this point. And it's really very powerful.
You know, I was thinking the other night of how the fight scenes were done, because I thought somebody might ask. And I never quite knew, even when I was there. I was present every day of the shoot, and I'd be standing right at ringside and watch Stacy Keach and Sixto Rodriguez. It seemed like it went on for several days that they filmed the fight. And they definitely were hitting each other. They had some stuff choreographed, but a whole lot of punches went in. I just don't think they were hitting as hard as they could. Like, the body punches were real, but not as hard, you know, as fighters would throw them. And it depends a hell of a lot on sound effects, I think. Oh, yeah. That sound effects will make a little light punch seem hard, but people were really hitting each other. And the first fight that Jeff Bridges has with a skinny kid who turned out to be a great light heavyweight contender, Yaki Lopez, when they were having their fight, Jeff Bridges told me afterwards that he kept telling the guy, you know, your punches look fake, you know. Go ahead and hit me. And he said, no, I don't want to hit you. You're an actor. And but he said, they worked out a deal where Lopez told Bridges, I spar every day in the gym, and I get hit every day. So you hit me all you want to make it look real, and then I'll, you know, just kind of tap you or something. So that's that's the way they worked it out.
And of course, we have to talk about the two actresses in this film, but my God, Susan Terrell this is such an unforgettable performance, and it is such an accurate performance, you know, as the character that you wrote in the novel. I mean, were you like stunned when you saw her doing this? It's like, holy cow.
Well, I guess I was to a degree. I saw quite a few actresses audition, and they were all pretty fake, except there was one I thought could have done it. But I didn't see her try out because she was a New York stage actress. And our casting director came out here and scouted her and virtually cast her with an okay from Houston and Stark. I am not sure she was ever in a movie. That may have been her first film. But for facial expressions, couldn't be improved on. Could she was a tough girl. She was, I don't know if she was a drunk, but she could have been.
If any of you know the legend of Susan Terrell, yeah, she's the real deal. You know, this is.
Yeah, I took her to the fights once. Went over to her house in L.A., and she obviously was looking dope anyway. You know, she had dope in the ashtray. I might as well tell the rest. Porn magazines on the table. She got involved with one of the boxers during the shoot who everybody was afraid of this guy. A lot of boxers are nice, gentle people out of the ring. And this guy, was I remember he used to remind me of a headhunter. I thought, this guy is really dangerous. And, you know, he threatened me, and he threatened other people. And anyway, they had a nice love affair, Susan and this guy.
She could obviously get along with anyone. there were other, this verisimilitude, if you will. Art Aragon is great in this picture, who plays Babe, who like Ruben. I'm sure a lot of you recognize Ruben Luna from Cheers, that he was the guy who played Coach on Cheers years later. But Art Aragon, who was his other guy, you know, that kid could, you know, he pissed blood. It was as clear as drinking water, you know. He was a boxer, and Oma's boyfriend was a real boxer.
He was a world champion. Yeah, Curtis Cokes.
Yeah. Curtis Cokes, world champion.
That was the only acting he'd ever done. I thought he was wonderful in that.
Yeah, he was absolutely terrific. Yeah.
I might as well tell you how he got discovered. Houston told me he was at the fights in Madison Square Garden, and a couple of seats over, he saw this black man, and he liked his looks and thought, that guy looked how I would like Earl to look. So then he got the idea, well, I'll talk to him. Maybe he could play Earl. So he started talking to him and found out right away he'd been a world champion. And that was probably all it took. And then he signed him, I guess. Anyway, definitely cast him.
Now, I hope you will share with the audience your opinion of who would have been the perfect Billy Tully. Not that Stacy Keach isn't absolutely phenomenal in this movie, but who did you see for this role?
I didn't really see anybody, but once in a while, young Marlon Brando would go through my mind when I was writing it. But Brando was already, you know, probably putting on too much weight and all that. So
actually, he made Night of the Following Day right about this time, and he was in the best shape of his career when he made that movie.
Well, actually, Stark and Houston talked to Brando about doing it, and I never heard what happened. It was like, I'll get back to you, that kind of thing. Anyway, he didn't go for it.
So what do you think, having seen this restoration, which I thought was absolutely gorgeous? I'm so thrilled that Grover Crisp at Sony, like I said, put his heart and soul in this restoration. So what's your opinion about it after all these years have passed? The legacy of the novel, and now I hesitate to say resurrection of the film, but it is a film that for whatever reason kind of slipped through the cracks back then, and I don't think has the reputation that it actually deserves. And here's the thing that I don't know if you agree with me, but you know, this is a movie that just would not be made today. This movie would not be made in this country today. It wouldn't be made for a movie theater in the way it's made, and I don't think you'd see this even on cable TV. Because there was something, I think, about that period, that late 60s, early 70s period, when very adventurous filmmaking like this, you know, an ambiguous ending and no heroes and no villains and things, I think it's kind of unique. And so what's your take after all these years on the legacy of the book and the film?
I don't think I could address the legacy. I hope there's a legacy. Well, I tell you, I've seen the movie a lot, and I enjoyed it very much tonight. It is, you know, It is more unusual now, I think, than when it was made. There were a lot of great foreign films being made when this was made, and films that I loved, you know, like Fellini, for instance. I don't think it was so strange back then. It probably would be now. I guess it would not be made now. I tried to do an honest story without gimmicks, and I don't think it was easy back in those days to do a story like that, but I would think it's impossible now. That's about all I could say okay. about that.
I think I was going to entertain questions, but I think what we'll do instead is let you ask those directly to Leonard, because we want to go outside, because I'm going to give one more pitch for Seriously. If you have not read this book, it is an uncanny piece of work, and I'm so happy that it's back in print, and I'm thrilled that the movie is back and restored to its full glory after all these years. So I want to thank all of you for coming out this evening, and I really want to thank Leonard Gardner.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.